On this episode, I discuss why sleep is so important, how much sleep we should be getting, what things could affect the quality of sleep, and some quick and easy solutions that I have found to be helpful. Listen up for more. Welcome to the Almost Athlete podcast, where I discuss insights to fitness, wellness, and lifestyle that I've gained over the years. Through my experiences, I have encountered countless numbers of people who have injuries, aches, pains, limitations, and health challenges. I believe the vast majority of these could be solved, minimized, or altogether avoided with some basic insight into anatomy and physiology principles, as well as an understanding of wellness, including nutrition and daily habits. My goal is to bridge the gap from the lack of digestible, easy-to-understand information to actionable insights for a more functional, happy life. This episode is brought to you by Partners Crackers. At Partners, our family makes everything from scratch using fresh, high-quality ingredients. Our gourmet cookies, crackers, and granola are wholesome and baked to a crispy crunch without preservatives or hydrogenated oils. This is real food, naturally. Family-owned, simply delicious. Partners Crackers. Today, I would like to talk about sleep. I believe sleep is one of the most neglected aspects of our health that all of us know that is important, but we all try to push the edges of what we can get away with. And I think that kind of is pretty self-explanatory. Most of you know what I'm talking about, but you know, I'm going to dive in a little bit deeper to some of the mistakes that I used to make and how I kind of figured out those were mistakes in the first place, and then some really kind of easy changes that I was able to make over time that's really made a big difference about improving my sleep, not only just quality, but overall effectiveness. So, you know, first of all, I think it's important for us to even ask, you know, the question of just why. Why is sleep important? Why do we need sleep? And, you know, I'm not a physiologist, and so I have definitely taken physiology courses, and I feel like I have a decent grasp on some of the components, but I'm just going to give kind of a quick overview, gross simplification of some of the things that I know are drastically important for our sleep and kind of why we need that. And then we'll kind of dive deeper into how we can go about improving the sleep quality if that's something that we struggle with, and ways that I've been able to figure that out for myself. And maybe there's some tips or things that you can take away from this that will possibly be helpful for your own life. So I'm going to jump right into it. My previous schedule, which, you know, I think is probably better than most when it looks at, when we're looking at just simply the amount of sleep that I was getting, I really have always prioritized sleep to a certain degree in my life, but for me, that was somewhere between going to sleep at around maybe 11:30 p.m. when I was done surfing the web or watching a TV show or whatever that was, and for me, that allowed me to wake up at around, let's say, 7 or 8 in the morning, which is when I typically did. And, you know, at the outlook, that looks like plenty of sleep. And oftentimes I thought it was, but I realized that there was a lot of mistakes about that sleep, and mainly the quality of the sleep, which I felt the effects from, but I didn't really understand the correlation of some of the kind of evening routine habits that I had kind of developed that were not helpful for me, and how there was, again, some ways that I could kind of hedge my bets against that. So ways that I would realize that my sleep quality was poor was, you know, really just kind of the obvious ones: not feeling really refreshed in the morning, feeling tired as early as after lunchtime or early afternoon, just feeling not super clear all the time with my thinking, and a lot of the other common things that we associate with being sleepy or getting poor sleep quality. And again, this was despite the fact of me getting most days between 7 to 8 hours of sleep, and which is, you know, right around kind of our target range for most people. So I think first what I decided to do was try to get up earlier in the mornings. And by making that schedule change, I forced myself to go to bed earlier in the evenings. And both of those could be very tricky changes to make. And so I definitely have done those in slow increments. And I've kind of talked about that before. But by backing out, going to sleep early, an hour earlier, or maybe even half hour chunks if that's what you need to do, and then also waking up that much earlier and kind of working my way into my ideal sleep zone or sleep time. And so eventually I kind of landed on the go to sleep at 9, wake up at 5, because for me that just works best schedule wise and allows me to get a lot of stuff done in the mornings. And again, that's something that I've spoke about before, so I won't get into that too much here. But with the sleep quality, one of the things that I think can be most damaging for us can be those things that disrupt it. But, you know, again, before I jump into that, let's talk a little bit more about some of the benefits or reasons why we really need to get good quality sleep and that's long enough for us. And some of those issues are tissue repair, you know, so if we're doing something even as simple as exercising, working out, we're going to cause stresses to those tissues, which are going to cause damage. And then our body needs to repair that damage in order to become stronger, which is how that whole process happens. And this repair or anabolic state where our body is now building that tissue back up is really happening in kind of a peak amount when we're sleeping. And there's a lot of other reasons, including cognitive reasons, why we need our good quality sleep. And some of these things are simply for storing memories, but also things like letting our brain really kind of regenerate so we can consume new information the next day, as well as use the information that we got the day before. And I think we've all experienced, or, you know, maybe not, but I definitely have many times where a night where I've gone out drinking and didn't sleep very well and had something I had to do the next day and woke up. And I'm sure part of the problem was the alcohol, not just the lack of sleep, but regardless, the feeling of fogginess, not clear thinking, feeling just like I wasn't able to make rash decisions at all times, or really even just positive thinking was really a challenge. And I think, you know, there's other people that talk about this point a lot more, including Tony Robbins, but the idea that when we're in kind of a down state, when our energy is low, that we're not really able to make positive decisions and decisions that are going to help us move forward. And this is something that I think is really important. So getting good sleep quality is really going to give value back the rest of the day. And so don't look at it like you're sacrificing time out of your busy schedule. Look at it like this is going to allow you to be much more productive and get a lot more out of the time that you're awake and really trying to focus on the things that you want to in your life. And so this is really, I think, a very, again, important piece of our health that we, including myself, oftentimes neglect. So now, how much sleep do we need? I think there's definitely debate upon this. The numbers that I continue to see by most of the sleep organizations and really anyone that kind of advises on this stuff is 7 to 9 hours for an adult, and it's going to be more for children. And I think it really depends upon the person. It depends upon what type of activity you're involved in. It depends upon your nutrition. It depends upon if you have any other ailments going on, if you're sick, you know, your stressors in your environment. The quality of sleep you're getting, I think, can really affect the need for the amount of sleep. So there's really a lot of factors within this, but I think if you shoot for the 7 to 9 hour range as at least a jumping off point, and then you can kind of figure out for yourself whether you need more or less, and, you know, really start paying attention to that. Because I think that's an easy thing to fall into as an automated part of your life and not take the time to pay attention to see, am I doing something that's maybe inhibiting good sleep quality, or am I simply not giving myself enough time to sleep well or to sleep enough? And so I think these are all important questions that we should, you know, kind of audit our lives with every once in a while and ask to see if we're on the right track. So now looking at things that can affect sleep quality, you know, some of these I think are probably pretty well researched, actually, now that I'm looking at my list here. But I think it's going to affect people much differently person to person, which is, you know, you can almost go without saying because that's pretty much everything in life. And so, but I do believe it's important to note that because I think some people, when looking at nutrition or diet or exercise information, it's too easy for, you know, myself or others to generalize and oversimplify things to where you apply it to yourself and then you make rules in this as kind of absolutes where they really shouldn't be. And I would say if you talk to almost any expert in any field, they're going to say the same thing. Whereas, you know, we know so much, but then we don't know what we think we know. And, you know, and really what I mean by that is there's a lot of variance in the nuances of these things person to person, but I think just understanding the general rules can give you a good starting place to start to maybe understand some of these kind of things better to how they affect you and your life. And so, you know, in no way is this a prescription for anything, really. It's just an idea of things that I've found to help me make changes, but also that may be worth kind of just checking out in your own life. And so, you know, the things that I found to affect me most, and I think, again, this is probably commonplace for most people, but the first one was light exposure. So what I mean specifically by light exposure was getting too much light in the evening, especially blue light. And, you know, how would I even know this is a couple things. First, I've started to come across a lot of information and people talking about how blue light can be damaging and mainly because of a couple specific things that it inhibits melatonin production. Melatonin, the hormone that we have that gets produced when there's low amounts of light, specifically blue light, and that is going to help us or allow us to go to sleep. And so that's a really important thing. It's also really important with some immunity kind of processes in our body. And so, you know, again, very interesting thing, something that I don't want to dive into too much here, but I think is a important thing to consider. But the opposite can also be a problem, meaning that so not only can too much blue light exposure in the evening, but not enough blue light exposure in the morning can also kind of set us off for the day with really issues with our circadian rhythm or our kind of wake sleep cycle. And so, you know, I live in Seattle where it's oftentimes not sunny. And so the problem with that is we're not getting as much exposure to this natural light that we need that's going to drive a lot of our hormone processes, you know, not limited to just vitamin D production, but there's a lot of other things that are happening when we get exposure to this blue light. And part of it is this kind of on-off cycle with our melatonin production. So so I have found that by managing this, or as best I can managing it, it's made a palpable difference in my sleep quality, but also just simply how I feel every morning when I get up. It's pretty amazing, actually. So the things that I've been able to do to affect this are really quite simple, actually. So two really main things. One is I have a blue light that I've set up on my counter where I get ready in the morning. And this is a bright blue light, Philips Go Light, I think is what it's called. And I can put a link in the show notes, but it's basically a bright blue light that is at a little bit of a tilt that I guess is supposed to mimic the angle of the sun coming up. But really what you're getting from it is that bright blue light exposure early in the morning. So it's kind of shutting things off as far as melatonin production, but it's also kicking your body the other processes on that you should be awake now. Today, the day is starting, let's get going. And then this is now going to help you when once we get to the evening to where it's time to shut things down and be tired because you've been going for a long time. And so this first was the change that I had made, and this in and of itself made a fairly significant difference. I would say within the first couple of days, I noticed a difference, and it's held true throughout. And I've been using this for close to 3.5 years now and really found a lot of benefit from it. So that has been the kind of attack of first thing in the morning. And then in the evening, by limiting blue light exposure specifically, but also just really bright lights, that has been a huge help as well. So, you know, how do I do this practically? Well, really just a few simple things. First is I purchased some blue light blocking glasses for myself and my girlfriend. And these basically look, they have like an orange tint lens on them and they just block the blue light. You can wear them. You can still, you know, do whatever you need to do. You can see things, you can use your computer, whatever else. And that is a really good, simple way to start kind of getting yourself used to limiting, that bright blue light. Another way that I also tried to kind of help myself with this is I just try to take notice of which lights in the house or that I'm using are brighter than others. And if I don't need that extra light, I just don't use it. I turn it off. And I find oftentimes there's multiple lights in a room and I can turn off that really bright one and it overall doesn't make much of a difference for the light in the room. And now I'm not getting as much of those blue light rays as well as some other stuff that could be, you know, potentially something that we want to avoid a lot of. And so, you know, I think it's light's a funny thing, and I think we're starting to learn a lot more about it and how it can affect a lot of some of our you know, internal processes and kind of how our physiology is managed. And you know, and if you think about it just from like kind of a really basic standpoint, it kind of makes sense that that may cause some problems, right? We have this artificial sun essentially indoors if we want 24/7, and oftentimes people are exposed to that, whether it's coming from your phone or your computer or just lights in general inside the house. I think that, you know, sometimes that can be a problem. So without diving, you know, too far into that stuff, I think just minimizing the really bright stuff in the evening, and then, you know, if you can get your hands on some blue light blocking glasses, which I'm pretty sure you can get for fairly inexpensive on Amazon. And then what I do is I just put them on top of my normal glasses, which I'm sure looks super cool, but it just allows me to, you know, again, do the things that I need to do in the evening, but also not get all that blue light exposure right before bed, where then it makes me have a hard time falling asleep. And so I found that about the 2-hour window, like 2 hours before I need to go to sleep, I try to put the glasses on and then, you know, again, start managing the really bright lights. And so for me, that's about 7 p.m. I try to get to go to sleep at 9 p.m. So starting at 7, grab my glasses. I also have a kind of an automatic dimmer or blue light blocker on my computer. It's called F.Lux. I'll put it in the show notes. I'm probably butchering that, but it's it goes based on your time zone, and then it starts to change the light based on the sunrise sunset time in your time zone. So that's actually pretty handy, because it's also for me another reminder, like, oh, okay, it's time to maybe back off the computer, maybe start minimizing how much I'm using my phone, that kind of stuff. And I think, you know, not only just from the light, just trying to kind of calm myself so I'm not constantly getting those signals of, look here, check this out, updates this, new emails, you know, all that constant things that we get kind of pulled to, I think it can be quite addictive and also make it really challenging to calm down once we get towards the evening. And a few other just small things that I have found, well, maybe not small, but maybe more obvious things that for me really ended up being significant was, for one, caffeine consumption. I've really tapered my caffeine consumption over the years, and I've had times where I drank coffee all day long, and I've also had times where I didn't drink any at all. And currently I drink coffee usually one coffee in the mornings, but sometimes what I would be doing when I was kind of trying to figure all this out was I would have some coffee in the morning and maybe sometimes in the afternoon, or maybe some tea with some caffeine in the afternoon, or things to help me kind of get an extra boost. And what I found was that caffeine actually affects me pretty significantly when I'm not over consuming it and getting a little bit of a kind of a tolerance built up to it. And so if I consume 1 to 2 caffeinated beverages a day and kept those both before noon, I found a significant change in how that affects my sleep quality. So if I keep to that kind of rule for myself, I'm able to get to sleep pretty well without really a change, whether I have caffeine or not that day. Whereas if I let myself have anything caffeinated in the afternoon, it will absolutely make it harder for me to go to sleep. Sometimes I use this as a little bit of a tool if I have something I need to do late in the evening, but doing that, I know going into it, I'm probably going to have a day of kind of getting back to my sleep cycle again to where it feels easy and consistent. And it's pretty amazing how much these things can be affected when you get out of your routine. But even to that, I think you can change them fairly quickly if you start being consistent with these changes. So, you know, again, for me, cutting the caffeine off at noon, and that gives me 9 hours before going to sleep to allow all that caffeine to get metabolized and kind of get through my system. And for me, that tends to work out pretty well. So the, you know, other few little quick things that you could do that can really be important are making sure that the lights in your bedroom are covered and or off as much as possible. Really, they're, you know, it should be blacked out almost in there, as long as there's no safety precautions or anything you need to be aware of. But I've found for myself, but also it seems like there's more and more kind of, you know, research and even just different people talking about their experiences that I've come across, that when you really make an effort to black out the light sources in your room, including everything from the power switch on your cell phone or any radio or anything you may have in the room, that really can improve your sleep quality, you know, versus having this kind of ambient low-level light that's constantly coming in and, you know, again, potentially inhibiting or disrupting some of that melatonin production. So I think that this is something that's really worth taking note and at least giving a try, you know, if this is something that you're struggling with for sleep quality. And then really the last one that I'll leave you with that I've found to make a pretty significant difference, again, is temperature. So I've kind of been one of those people that I've always been very cold. I just have a very low body temperature for some reason. I have bad blood flow to my hands and feet, and this is something that's always kind of been an issue with me. But when it comes to sleeping, I've gone through phases of sleeping with clothes on, with thick socks on, with heating blankets, and then going the opposite route with sleeping with only a sheet and, you know, maybe one little blanket, something like that, and really had mixed results across the board. But I found that I tended to try to increase the heat overall, whether it was just with clothing or blankets or in the room. And this is something that I found to be a kind of a mistake for myself, and again, consistent with a lot of other people. But I have found that if I decrease the temperature of my room, and for me, it tends to be between about 67 to 69 is kind of the perfect range. If I can get it to that temperature, I tend to sleep a lot better. And I think, you know, so there's something about that when the room's a little bit cooler, your body can really relax. I believe that your body temperature rises as you sleep. And you know, that's probably a component of it, where if you feel like it's a comfortable temperature when you're trying to fall asleep, and then you fall asleep and your body temperature rises, then that's maybe a little uncomfortable and that could potentially disrupt your sleep. So for me, you know, the 67 to 69 range is where I really find the best quality sleep. But, you know, again, something worth just checking. And if your sleep is great, then awesome. You know, maybe you have some tips for me, but these small changes really have added up to make a significant difference to the sleep quality that I have. And, you know, even on days where I maybe get to sleep a little late or have to get up maybe a little bit earlier or something that I don't quite get that full 8 hours, I really do pretty well. And it's partly probably because I have a kind of a buffer in my system now because I'm consistently hitting that 8 hour mark. But also I really think it's because the quality of sleep has gotten a lot better because of all these small changes that I'm just able to be consistent with. And, you know, I think that's like most of our aspects of, you know, fitness, wellness, health, all these different things is it's small things that we do consistently over a longer period of time. And that's really what makes the big change. And so, and really puts us in the place we want to be. So I think that's enough for today. I hope you enjoyed it and I look forward to sharing more with you soon. Thanks for listening. To learn more insights to fitness, wellness, or lifestyle, or to sign up for my newsletter, go to thealmostathlete.com.